Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and if you've been with us at all this week, you've probably heard us talking about the music our parents played for us when we were little kids. We've had a number of you sharing your stories, and on Monday, when we kicked off this discussion, I posted my own list of songs that I played for my kids when they were little. That list is still on our website, soundcheck.org, and if you check it out, you'll see there's a comment from one of my daughters reprimanding me for leaving off three songs that she clearly remembers. 16 Tons, the Tennessee Ernie Ford version, Lola by the Kinks, and Games Without Frontiers by Peter Gabriel, all of which, she hastened to add, are inappropriate for kids. Guess she's right, but, you know, how can you tell what's going to be appropriate for little kids? You just got to take your best guess, like this listener did.
Hi, this is Damien calling from Brooklyn. I have a 3-year-old daughter, and I've been playing music for her since before she was born. In fact, the first album that my wife and I ever played for her when she was still in the womb was "Donuts" by J. Dilla. We put the headphones up to my wife's belly, and gave my daughter a keen sense of rhythm.
We'll hear some more of your stories about the music your parents played for you when you were a kid later in the show. Also, we'll hear about another side of David Lee Roth, the lead singer of the band Van Halen, and our weekly pick 3 has a hip-hop flavor. But first, some live music from the English singer and songwriter Jamie Liddell. Liddell's combination of soul, R&B, and electronica has attracted millions of YouTube views, and he's set up shop in Nashville in recent years, which is where he made his new album, also called Jamie Liddell. Here he is to play the song Don't You Love Me, live on Soundcheck.
Nothing broke, we can't repair. Well, we can make it up first, babe. It's tearing up this love, ain't fair. Oh, don't you love me? Don't you love me anymore? Don't you love me anymore? Don't you love me anymore? Please say yeah. Say it ain't so. We can make it a pattern, fall into the same things every day. But we need a new direction. You know we can go on this way. Is your cold stare? Should you say something to show me you still care? Please say, say you love me, baby. Oh, just don't say you.
That is Jamie Liddell live on Soundcheck with a song called Don't You Love Me. It appears on his latest album, which is also called Jamie Liddell. And believe it or not, that was just Jamie live here in the Soundcheck studio. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
That's quite a setup you've got here with all the keyboards and the computers and the little black boxes and the mixers and the multiple microphones and stuff.
Yeah. It sort of takes me back to how I used to play live, which, started out of kind of necessity, to be honest. Mm-hmm.
Now, you just finished a world tour.
Yes.
Like this, or touring with a band?
It was like this. It was solo. I mean, my band, if you will, was Visual. We had, like, tightly locked projections and a light show. That's something I've always wanted to do, actually. I mean, being kind of an electronic act.
Right.
First and foremost, I mean, I got signed to a really electronic label, Warp Records, back in 99 for making what was at the time pretty obtuse kind of electronica. Mm-hmm. And then sort of I went into this kind of more soul sort of territory. But I guess I'm kind of coming full circle with this, trying to incorporate electronics and all the soul and kind of like bring it home. As you say, take a little Minneapolis in.
Yeah.
As I'm, you know. As I'm
Little Prince,
taking a harvest. Yeah.
But the album is—I mean, one of your prior records is called Jim, which was almost self-titled. But this one is called Jamie Liddell. So is this like Portrait of the Artist kind of thing?
It is in a lot of ways. It really is because, like I was saying, it's kind of it's very electronic, heavily so. It's full of synths and drum machines and all those good things. But it's also, there's layers of vocals and really warm sounds in the mix too. I don't think the record is cold necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Except for the one song, So Cold.
Well, yeah, So Cold, yeah. Well, neither, so yeah, that had to be cold. I mean, exactly. But, I mean, there's guitars, bass, there's a lot of real drums and loads of vocals. And I tried to mix it all up. And that's fairly me.
And the story is you made this at home.
I did, yeah.
In the house there in Nashville.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think people could, be imagining all kinds of things. And to be honest, it's quite a strange turn of events, I'll admit. For me, clearly not Southern American. Mm-hmm. I'm a Southern Englishman, though. So, I mean, I guess I'm keeping it Southern, in a way, going to my roots. But that's it. My wife and I have this amazing house. Mm-hmm. And it was a real fortuitous find. And the then library of a couple of Vanderbilt professors is now, become my studio room. And I had a huge mixing desk in there. And it was just like, I had all my toys set up for the first time in years, having lived in New York and been watching them gathering dust and living in this very disciplined, almost Tokyo existence where everything had its home. Now I can sprawl at last. And that the result of that sprawl was kind of this album in a way. So,
The album is called Jamie Liddell. It is out now. I mentioned Prince. You mentioned, sort of alluded to Prince too. You actually met him once, and there's kind of a funny story about your meeting.
Yeah, I mean, they say don't meet your idols. I don't know where, I mean, they, in their infinite wisdom, I think they might be right. In this case, it was just a strange meeting. At the time, it was really, it broke my heart, you know, because obviously being such a huge fan, mm-hmm. I wanted this meaningful experience, I wanted this, I wanted that, you know.
So where were you?
I came with a lot of expectations. Montreux Jazz Festival. Mm-hmm. I was playing after Janelle Monáe, who's a great artist, and I've worked with her in the capacity, well, she was my opening act, believe mm-hmm. it or not, for a whole tour, and, you know, destined for great things, as is, you know, she's getting her dues now. It's great to watch her, and Prince has always been a big fan. So he was there, present with none other than Quincy Jones, who was also with Prince during that meeting. So I was making my way to stage. I knew Prince was there, but I was desperately trying to avoid him, just thinking this is not going to go well. As I came over, look, Janelle kind of insisted that I come by. Mm-hmm. Prince insisted not to acknowledge me. And at the time, it's sort of, you know, I was like, all right, fair enough. This is awful. Plus, I was absolutely, you know, I was just dribbling, I think. I was doing anything other than, you know.
So you were not
together.
Mr. Cool.
No, God, no, it was
when
awful.
When placed in front of your idol.
No, it was miserable. It was, the whole experience was really weird. But then looking back at it, it was perfect. If Prince had been like, oh, great to meet you, you know, good luck tonight, have a great show, la-di-da, I would have been like, weird. Yeah. That's not Prince. Prince was just himself. He was a good eccentric. And, you know, it kind of makes me happy now that the experience went down like that.
You know, this didn't occur to me until you walked into the studio here today. I'm slightly over 6 feet tall, and I have to look up to you. And Prince is known to be a shorter fellow, and I wonder if there's a little, you know, he's such a larger-than-life character that when he meets a much larger guy, I just wonder if that's part of the refusal to make eye contact or something.
He did look at my wife. she's
so he acknowledged her.
Yeah. See, that's it. I need the sex change, I think. No, I don't know. Prince will always be, you know, he's always like my first love musically. Mm-hmm. So he just remains in this kind of untouchable dimension in my mind. He still is there.
We're speaking with Jamie Liddell, whose latest album is also called Jamie Liddell. But you want to play some older stuff for us next?
Yeah, well, I mean, I just wanted to give people a taste of what I've been doing live. Because, you know, as a live electronic musician, a lot of electronic musicians in general are faced with this sort of quandary, that a word?
Yeah.
You know, how to actually play. So I've been messing with loops and with my voice and synths and drum machines and stuff for a while, and I've brought it back for this live show. So I thought I'd give you a little taste of that, and then a remix of another song to kind of give you another kind of take on how to play electronics live.
All right, so you're going to do a little bit more,
yeah,
which was used in a Target ad.
It was
here in the States.
It was.
Is this the one that has the video of you lying in bed playing the song on your iPhone?
There is that as well, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So no iPhone in evidence
here, but
lots of other stuff. So
exactly. All right.
Have at it.
Go. All right.
All right. Jamie Liddell performing live here on Soundcheck. The song, originally from his 2005 album called Multiply, is called A Little Bit More.
Revolution, I'm a telling you with grow. There is no fancy way to get out of here. Got so good at hiding and never made my feelings clear. Moment now to spill it out. When all this is over, trust there'll be no doubt. Doing the rest, gotta find somewhere else. Cause with you, it's always more. With you, more. There'll be 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 more. With you, more. Yeah. Cause it already is quite enough for me. I can take it for a little while, but a little while ain't gonna be. With your head of mine, cause with your head of mine, you know you never find in a feeling like me. Yeah. In a mystery, from a history, I'm the kind of fool that can't see in front of me. In a mystery, from a history, I'm the kind of fool that can't see in front of me.
Once again, that's Jamie Liddell performing live here in the Soundcheck studio. You can check out video on our website at soundcheck.org. His latest album is called Jamie Liddell. It's out now, and we'll hear Jamie performing another song a bit later in the show. I want to play you just a few more voicemails that we got in response to this week's question. What music did your parents choose for you when you were too little to choose your own?
This is Jason from Pagoda, New Jersey. I was just listening to your radio broadcast about growing up with your parents' music, and funny you should mention that because I actually had a conversation with my parents a couple weeks ago and sat down with them and actually thanked them for the fantastic taste in music that they instilled in me. Growing up, my parents had, my father had a ridiculous sound system, huge speakers. When I was a kid, I thought they were like 4 or 5 feet tall, but there were these huge speakers, and all day just playing everything from the Beatles, Steely Dan, Little Feat, Bonnie Raitt, Van Morrison, you name it. I mean, just unbelievable, unbelievable stuff.
Turns out Jason's not the only one feeling pretty good about the music his parents chose for him.
Love the show. My name is Marie, age 70. I grew up in the rock and roll era of the Platters and Elvis, listened to it and loved it. But at home, my mom and dad played big band music, music from the 30s and the 40s. And I have to say, that's my favorite genre. My daughter is baffled by all of this, but I have to tell you that that was wonderful music, and I appreciate my parents for that legacy and for all those wonderful composers and lyricists of that era.
We also heard from our listener Candace in Detroit, who's feeling similarly grateful.
I was actually, I think, very blessed to grow up in a household with my grandparents and also my mom. So the music that I got was definitely very generational and cross-cultural, which was awesome. From my grandparents, I got a lot of blues, Bobby Blue Bland and B.B. King. And growing up listening to Sam Cooke, if I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, I'd hammer in the evening, all over this land.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, hammer in the evening, all over this land. I'd hammer out danger, hammer out a warning, not the hammer out love. Between my brothers and my sisters, and all over this land.
And then for my mom, because she was a kid of the 70s or a teenager of the 70s, definitely a lot of Funkadelic, a lot of George Clinton.
Nasty Dogs.
I felt like I was very fortunate in that sense because I got everything from Sam Cooke and Nat King Cole to George Clinton, and you can't ask for more than that, can you?
Wow, Sam Cooke and Parliament Funkadelic. Candace had really cool parents. All right, thanks to all of you who called in this week. We're always happy to hear from you. Our voicemail number is 866-939-1612. Up next, our contributor Soumya Krishnamurthy brings us an assortment of three new hip-hop releases, including one that drew some attention from the White House. This is Soundcheck.
Three, that's a magic number.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. You know what that music means. Time for another pick three. Hip-hop writer Soumya Krishnamurthy joins us today to give us a roundup of three brand new tracks. Soumya, good to see you again.
How are you, sir?
Good. Let's start with Drake, because he's been busy online lately.
He's been very busy online, so for a lot of people, if you don't know, Drake has been in the studio working on his brand new album. It's to be determined when it's coming out. I'm hearing summer, fallish. But in the meantime, as he's always done, he's been putting out a lot of music online for free. One track that came out this week that's causing a lot of buzz is a song interestingly titled Girls Love Beyonce.
Hmm.
Captain Obvious, maybe. But we see Drake kind of returning to his singing in the, you know, the last few songs he's released, such as 5 a.m. in Toronto. He's doing a lot more rapping, but he's saying, guys and girls, I'm still singing. I still have that emo quality that you love so much about me. And it's featuring James Fauntleroy, who's an amazing singer, someone I've been watching for a long time from the Cocaine 80s Collective. And for a lot of you 90s R&B heads like myself, 90s 2000s, it samples Destiny's Child, Say My Name.
Okay, let's hear a little bit from Drake and the single called Girls Love Beyonce.
You try to act like it's just me, but I am not alone. But if you're alone, then say my name, say my name.
If no one is around you, say baby I love you if you ain't running game. Say my name, say my name. You acting kinda shady. Baby, why the sudden change? Say my name. Say my name, say my name, oh. Say my name, if no one is around you.
Yeah, say my name, say my name. Cause those other men are practice. And this ain't no time for acting. And this ain't no time for games. And this ain't no time for...
That is Drake, winner of a Grammy for his 2011 Take Care, and now working on a full-length album. And a song called Girls Love Beyonce. So, Soumya, that's James Fauntleroy with him there singing the actual Destiny's Child part.
Yes, absolutely. So he's the one singing the famous Say My Name that Beyonce made famous. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, the thing about Drake that he always does is really combining singing and rapping in a way that's palatable to men and women, which, you know, is easier said than done. To have a song called Girls Love Beyonce that many guys that I know have already downloaded and are listening to publicly is kind of a big feat. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. Right before he releases albums, he always puts out buzz tracks. Last time around, he redid TLC's Fan Mail. So this is just kind of par for the course for Drake. He's like, guys, I'm giving you something on the rapping side, on the singing side. You know, kind of expect the unexpected when it comes to that kid.
All right. So there is a full-length album coming out. Nothing Was the Same is at least tentative title for
that,
the new
that
record?
That seems to be the title. And from what I'm hearing, that he's working with a lot of the Toronto guys, Boy Wanda, obviously 4D. So it should be interesting. I know they've been hard at work recording for a while now.
And would we expect to hear 5 a.m. in Toronto and Started from the Bottom and this song on the new record?
You know, you're never really sure because Drake puts out so much music and he's really sort of in charge of his own A&Ring. The word single as it pertains to him is always, you know, a little tenuous.
Yeah.
You know, I think this song specifically is probably going to be just a buzz track. I'm pretty sure the Say My Name clearance was kind of expensive. I know he's friends with Beyonce, but that seems a little bit on the pricey side. So
yeah.
I think this might just be a teaser.
Okay. But Beyonce sort of neatly segues us into the next part of your pick three, her husband Jay-Z. Now, I can't believe this was a thing, but Jay-Z and Beyonce going to Cuba turned out to be like a political hot potato. And
yes,
that sort of occasioned this next track.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, with Jay, when you throw him a hot potato, he always responds lyrically like any good rapper would. So he dropped Open Letter, which basically he, you know, spoke to all the critics who said, why did you go to Cuba? How did you do this? And, you know, the track itself is fine. It's produced by Swiss Beatz, a longtime contributor. But what was most interesting was it actually got on the radar of the White House. So during a press briefing, a reporter said, so in the song, he mentions he spoke to Obama, you know, one of his besties personally, and he got the cosign. And there was a great lyric, something to the extent of, you know, Obama said, chill, you're going to get me impeached. And, you know, of course, White House spokesperson Jay Carney said, absolutely not. You know, Obama did not speak to Jay, and he actually threw in a little jab and said, you know what, maybe he couldn't find a word that rhymed with treasury, because it was the Treasury Department that co-signed the trip and not Barack Obama.
Yeah.
But, you know, Jay-Z always staying in the headlines.
And I, just to give him credit, Carney's actual quote to the reporter who asked the question was, it's a song.
It is a song. But, you know,
I think with
Jay, Beyonce, Barack, sometimes it's hard to know if art's imitating life because
yeah.
They are friends. You know, obviously Beyonce performed at the inauguration.
Mm-hmm.
They held a huge fundraiser at Jay's 4040 Club right here in New York. So it's kind of hard to tell, you know, is it just a song? Are they texting each other? Who knows? You know, I feel like they're probably on each other's speed dial.
Well, this is called Open Letter. It's Jay-Z's open response to the people who criticized him and Beyonce taking that trip to Cuba.
I done turned Havana to Atlanta. Right. Why I've ever shirts and bandanas. Hey, tiny thing that got me, I switched the planner. Bulletproof this radio scanners. Ballin' to they banners. You getting too much bread, they try to jam you. Boy from the hood, but got White House clamors. Sorry, y'all, I don't agree with y'all parents. Politicians never did for me. Except lie to me, distort history. Wanna give me jail time and a fine. Fine, let me commit a real crime. I might buy a cheap key. Out of spite, I just might flood these streets. Hear the freedom in my speech, got an onion from Universal, read it and weep. Would've bought the nest to Brooklyn for free, except I made millions off of you, weep. I still own the building, I'm still keeping my seats. Y'all buy that, y'all better keep y'all receipts. Obama said, chill, you gon' get me impeached. You don't need anyway, chill with me on the beach.
Jay-Z name-checking the White House and Barack Obama.
I'd like Barack to tell me to go chill on the beach. Must be nice.
And people taking this literally, as if Jay-Z had literally gotten a call from Obama where Obama said, chill with me on the beach. Don't go to Cuba. It's too much trouble. Open letter by Jay-Z. Do you expect this will ever actually appear on a record?
You know, with Jay, he's always recording, you know, the thing about his camp, they're super secretive. You know, I've seen him in the studio. He's executive producing the Great Gatsby soundtrack. So he's definitely working on a lot of things musically. I think this was just a response record. He came back from Cuba. He was tanned. You know, he had smoked a lot of cigars. And he's like, you know what? I'm tired of being the news every day. This is an easy way to really set the record straight.
Mm-hmm. Of course, he didn't set the record straight at all. He just sort of like churned up more political turmoil for the White House.
Like any good artist does.
Yep. We're speaking with Soumya Krishnamurthy. She's sharing her pick three with us. Soumya writes about hip hop for MTV, Rolling Stone and Billboard and visits us occasionally on Soundcheck as well. And the common thread with all three of the songs that you've picked for us today is they were all released online. Not part of albums, but just kind of thrown up on SoundCloud usually.
Yeah, absolutely.
For people to just kind of like find them and say, oh, look who's back.
Absolutely. I mean, and, you know, it's that newfangled thing called the internet. You know, all the kids are doing it. But I think especially as it relates to hip hop, you know, that culture of always putting out music in the form of mixtapes, in the form of, you know, diss tracks, whatever. Just the proliferation of music. It's like more is more. And I think it's great, you know, with something like this, you don't have to go through a label or make sure it's ready for radio. You don't have to even clear samples. Just put it out there. Mm-hmm. Let the public, you know, snatch it up. And I think that's just kind of the power of, you know, the internet and where we are today and artists really taking control of their careers.
And does it get to the point where, you know, if Jay-Z releases a track, Kanye thinks, uh-oh, Jay-Z did something. I got to get something out now.
Yes, and that actually happened. It's, you know, that kind of nice peer pressure where Kanye, I don't know where he is right now, Paris or something, awaiting his first child. And, you know, he's on the computer like the rest of us, being the good hip-hop nerd that he is. He sees, oh, my God, my friend and big brother Jay put out a track. I need to put out something. So Kanye and his good friend Pusha T, who's formerly of the Clips, now part of the Good Music Collective, put out a new track, Numbers on the Board.
And came out basically later the same day, right?
Absolutely. And that's the way to do it. You know, it's all about kind of one-upping each other. So you put out a track at noon, let me put out one at 12:05 and see who has the SEO win at the end of the day.
So Numbers on the Boards is the name of the song. This had to have been something they were working on.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I mean, it sounds pretty finished, too.
It's definitely pretty finished. I mean, I spoke to Pusha. He's someone who, you know, I've spoken to over the years. He's been in Paris working on his new album, My Name Is My Name, working heavily with Kanye West. So, you know, knowing them, they probably had 20, 30 tracks in the vault. Hey, Jay put something out. Let's see if we can top him and put something out ourselves.
All right. We'll hear a little bit of this new Pusha T track called Numbers on the Boards. Soumya Krishnamurthy, thanks for sharing your pick three with us.
Absolutely.
This is Soundcheck.
Got wings. If you fly, do it to death. It's only one God and it's only one crown. So it's only one king that can stand on this mound. King Push, Kingpin, Overlord. Coast Guard, come a hundred going overboard. I got money with the best of them. Go blow for blow with any Mexican. Don't let your side bitches settle in. Might have to head, but you ever land. Blend ballers, I put numbers on the boards.
Up next, we talk with a writer who recently spent some quality time with Van Halen lead singer David Lee Roth and his collection of swords. You won't want to miss it.
When you get to Asheville, send me an email. Tell me how you're doing, how it's treating you.
And you also won't want to miss Steve Martin and Edie Brickell. They'll play live here in our studio on Monday, April 22nd in the afternoon. You can tune in to our website to hear their live recording session. That's at soundcheck.org, 2 p.m. Eastern, Steve Martin, Edie Brickell, this coming Monday at soundcheck.org. Most of us know David Lee Roth as the original frontman of this band, Van Halen, during the band's peak in the early 80s. You might also know David Lee Roth for his onstage jump kicks and karate moves. But for one music writer, Diamond Dave was a childhood hero. Steve Kandel has stayed loyal to Roth during the singer's droopy solo career and later work as a morning radio host, martial artist, podcaster, and even New York City EMT. Well, that loyalty has paid off because Steve Kandel recently got to spend a Saturday night hanging out with David Lee Roth and wrote about it for the site BuzzFeed. Hey, Steve, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks for having me.
For people who don't know or don't like Van Halen, let's do a little David Lee Roth for dummies.
Okay.
You refer to him as the or rock star. Why?
You know, I think he, I mean, almost in the derogatory sense, almost when people think of that sort of cliche of like the sort of, you know, shirtless leather pants, you know,
long hair,
semi-androgynous, you know, groupie pillaging, hotel room trashing kind of stereotype that was kind of, you know, slayed like a dragon at some point. I mean, he definitely didn't invent that stuff.
So what Robert Plant of Led Zeppelin was to the early 70s, David Lee Roth might have been to the early 80s?
Sure, maybe. You know, but I think it also, you know, where as opposed to something like, you know, bands like The Who or Led Zeppelin, where there was also this sort of like kind of like heavier or more artistic pretension to some of these things too. With a band like Van Halen, it was really just like, it was party music, and it
right.
was smarter than it needed to be, but it didn't necessarily go out of its way to tell
let you
know
that.
But
yeah.
it was essentially,
yeah.
you know, songs about girls in L.A. and you know, and sometimes people don't like big dumb fun things. But I think if you have the right attitude about it, and you're sort of celebrating it, and you're smarter than people think that it is, that stuff holds up really well because there's more to it. You know, there was more going on there.
I found the simple life, it's so simple. When I jumped out on that road, I got no love, no love you'd call real. Ain't got nobody waiting at home. Running with the devil.
Running with the Devil, 1978 song from Van Halen, featuring vocals by David Lee Roth, who is the subject of a lengthy profile by my guest Steve Kandel on BuzzFeed. It's called David Lee Roth Will Not Go Quietly, and you can find a link to it on soundcheck.org. Let me ask you about your assignment.
Mm-hmm.
Was the assignment to actually spend a Saturday night with David Lee Roth?
The background to it, I mean, I was supposed to interview him when the Van Halen album came out last year,
mm-hmm.
and that just they just kept kind of pushing that back out, and they really didn't do any press at all. So in a way, this is sort of carried over from that, and you know, at one point, I was going to maybe meet up with him in New York, and then I floated the idea of of going to his house in L.A. and hanging out with his dog, and they said yes. So
what was that like? I mean, does he trash his living room Saturday night?
He doesn't. He's 57. He lives in Pasadena in the same house that he's had for about 25 years. You wouldn't know if you – I mean, the house is, you know, surrounded by a big ivy-covered wall, but it's a pretty, you know, nondescript suburban block. You wouldn't know. You walk in. It's, you know, it's a beautiful old, like, Spanish-style mansion, but there's kind of no furniture in it anywhere. There's no lights. All the windows are open. It's super drafty. You know, he's not there a whole lot. He has a place in New York, and he has a place in Tokyo now, and then a lot of time he's now on the road again.
And is he there? Is it just him? I mean, you know, that song we were just hearing, there's that line in Running with the Devil where he sings, "Ain't got nobody waiting at home." I mean,
yeah, he is a confirmed bachelor. I mean, he's never been married. He said he's never been in a relationship longer than a year and a half. He has an Australian cattle dog named Russ that he lives with. But I think he said that he decided not to get married when he realized that he didn't have to. And so that, you know, and it's not necessarily because he's sort of catting around. I just think that I think he enjoys the quiet. I think he enjoys getting to go wherever he wants to go, whenever he wants to go there, and not having anyone else he has to think about. And I think that's actually pretty honest, because I'm sure there's a lot of people who have that attitude and actually do have families that they just don't pay a lot of attention to. So there's something actually weirdly honest and refreshing about, like, yeah, I may just want to get up and go somewhere tomorrow, and this way I don't have to worry about it.
All right, Steve Kandel's with us. You can see a link to his profile of Van Halen singer David Lee Roth on our website, soundcheck.org. It's called David Lee Roth Will Not Go Quietly. So he's there in Pasadena, but you mentioned he's got places in New York and now in Tokyo. And there's a very funny story in your piece where he brings out these Japanese swords, these katana swords.
Yeah, he has these katana swords in his living room that has no furniture. I don't even know how much these swords are worth, but they're, you know, like, really, you know, like antique katana swords, and he knows how to use them. And he also has these, like, bamboo kind of practice ones you can
training swords.
Also. And I mean, that's his entire living room. That is the extent of the furniture.
So was there sword play involved when you got
there? Was a little bit. I tried swinging one, but it's unless you really know what you're doing, it's hard to feel cool. You think that it would be cool, like, holding a, you know, a Japanese katana sword with David Lee Roth, until you hold it in your hands and you realize, I just don't know what I'm doing with this. But almost anything I do could be incredibly dangerous. So,
and David Lee Roth seems to have cottoned on to that pretty quickly from his reaction.
I think so. I don't get the sense that there's a lot of people coming in there and picking that up off the wall and playing with it. But, you know, he's been studying this stuff since he was a kid, and he's serious about it. And you know, and it's because of that you know, he's in great physical shape, even though he's smoking and drinking. He's able to sort of do things that that a lot of people can't. I mean, he was always, like, the most sort of physical and, like, acrobatic performer.
The jumping and stuff. Yeah.
And he still does a lot of that stuff, too. And he had a lot of, like, serious back injuries, which I hadn't known about. That had not been in the press before. But, you know, because of that stuff, he's able to sing a certain way, because he's, you know, it's not like he's just doing it because he likes the way it sounds or it makes for a good story. I mean, he's pretty, you know, for someone who is on one hand considered a cartoon, I think he's also more himself than almost anyone you would talk to in that stature. He's pretty comfortable in his own skin. Non-stop talker,
talking about David Lee Roth, singer for the band Van Halen, the once and future singer.
Yeah.
1985, they split up. They're now back together. He also has, you know, some background in radio, doing this podcast series now called The Roth Show. Mm-hmm. And episode 11 of The Roth Show, he tells us that tattoo is the most common art form across cultures. Is he all inked up somewhere that we don't see?
His back is crazy. Yeah, you don't really see, because now he used to be shirtless all the time, and now you sort of see him maybe on stage. He'll have like a matador jacket that's open in front, but you don't see his back. Certainly not the way he used to. But he's got this crazy like serpent thing all on his back. And again, like I don't. He's not like a dilettante. If he gets into something, he gets into something in
seriously,
a huge way. And he sort of designs the tattoos himself, also, and you know, and he learns about it. It's all a very specific kind.
Well, and he talks about in this podcast, he talks about how cavemen probably did the first tattoos, and then drops this little public service announcement.
In the United States today, over 51% of the people walking into the tattoo studios is women. It's gals. And it transcends all other kinds of age ranges, provided you're 18 or whatever. And I would not recommend you get yourself a tattoo before you're 18. And even then, you got to remember that your tone and your temperament and your sense of humor and everything is going to change. So be very careful about what you make permanent as far as your permanent statement. And a tattoo is a permanent statement.
Interesting.
He,
so your sense of humor will change because you've gotten a tattoo.
And his, I mean, his has too. I mean, like, you know, on one hand, I'm saying that he's comfortable in his own skin. But the thing that he's like really interested in with this podcast, and the thing he loves talking, and he loves putting all the things that he's done and he's learned about into this context where he can sort of then now like give life lessons about it. And that's really his thing. Like he feels like he has a lot to offer in terms of like, you know, teaching you what to do based on the things he's done. Because a lot of the things he's done are things you might not get a chance to do unless you really go out of your way.
So if I do something stupid, can he save my life still? I mean,
yeah.
he was an EMT, an emergency medical technician.
And you have to get recertified every 3 years. Like in California, he would be treating first responders, basically. It's all very specific.
Because, you know, he worked as an EMT here in New York, in the Bronx.
In the all over the place, Washington. I mean, he's, you know, East New York, you know, really all places that you know, he doesn't have to go, I think he takes a lot of pride in that too, because you know his career hit the skids like a lot of people's at that time, and there's no shame in that. And you can either sort of flog it all the way down, or you can sort of figure out like, well, what else can I do? And you know, I think he views that as a way of you know, in a way, giving back, like being of use, which is kind of the opposite of being like a, you know.
The image of the rock star.
Yeah, little bit. But he still has, but he never disowns anything. He doesn't do it as atonement. He doesn't say, well, that was all a very silly and selfish way to be, so I'm going to do this now. Yeah. Instead, it's all like you can do both. And that seems interesting because usually when people get to his age with that kind of indulgence, they're sort of doing like the apology tour.
Yeah.
Somebody give me a doctor.
David Lee Roth is back with Van Halen after, you know, many years of being apart. There was that abortive effort to put the forces all back together in the 90s. They've actually done a record that we've mentioned before and toured and stuff. So how are relations inside the band?
They actually do get along fine, but also it's this thing where like they're not riding around in a van together. They can control when they see each other. They play together, and so there's not really the opportunity for tension the way there used to be. And but you know, he sort of it's that sense of like volatility is so much part of like the band's legend that they almost have to play that up. But like to me, I thought the most shocking thing that he had said in that entire conversation was the fact that like, this is it. They're fine. They're going to do something every 3 years. They're going to record songs up at Eddie's, you know, home studio, and it might not be the way he would want to do it, but that's the deal. And it's compromises all around, and it's a huge cash cow, and they're going to keep it going, and they're all in their late 50s, and you don't, you know, there's plenty of room to do other stuff that isn't that.
Mm-hmm.
And in a weird sort of almost sad way, that's it. It's actually going to be just fine. And so you just realize that's sometimes how some of these stories come to an end, is very sort of...
Is by not ending?
By not ending and just sort of becoming almost like just this thing that's there. and it's not explosive and it's not super dramatic. It's just there.
A different kind of truth was just there in 2012.
It was just there. And it was
Van Halen back together with David Lee Roth, and this song from that album's called Stay Frosty.
And I traveled to the South Egypt, Rabbi appeared to me. Voice heavy with the sands of time, he made me see. Same as Kabbalah did, but few it's free. God guides us on our journey, but careful with those feet. Stay frosty, in a world without end. Stay frosty, like the ancient immortal said. Don't want him to get you go, don't show him where it's yet. And that's just what I did. Stay frosty.
Woo! Look out!
Stay frosty now. Use my hand, I won't look. I journeyed to the east and I struggled to stay afloat. A solitary Buddhist monk threw me a rope. Looked me in the eye and said, don't make me say this twice. You want to be a monk, you gotta cook a lot of rice.
That is Van Halen with David Lee Roth, back together again in 2012's A Different Kind of Truth, and the song Stay Frosty. And we're talking with Steve Kandel, whose profile of Van Halen singer David Lee Roth for the site BuzzFeed is called David Lee Roth Will Not Go Quietly. You can find a link to it on our website, soundcheck.org. And Steve, he's Diamond Dave. Mm-hmm. Where does he ultimately exist in the rock pantheon?
You know, That's something that I was trying to figure out too, because I realized I'm an editor at BuzzFeed and quite a bit older than a lot of my coworkers, and they really have no point of reference for him. Like, I don't think there's any real legacy there. And when you and I were talking about this idea of like the cartoon rock star, mm-hmm. like that cartoon that doesn't even really exist for them. You know, if you were a child of the '90s, like that was something that didn't, you know, that wasn't part of the pop cultural fabric at all. In fact, what was popular at the time was sort of engineered to be the exact opposite of that. It does feel like that whole sort of aspect of rock history and what they stood for is kind of frozen in amber. Sure, they would have their detractors in terms of critics, in terms of punk or whatever, but that's about as close as you can get to like a band that like everyone's going to like that, you know, and that doesn't exist anymore. And I feel like that's why it's important.
And David Lee Roth will not go quietly. The band Van Halen continues, and Steve Kandel's profile, a good example of a long read. You spent a long Saturday night with David Lee Roth, lived to tell the tale. You can find a link to Steve's article on our website at soundcheck.org. Steve, thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
Before we wrap up the show for tonight, let's hear one more performance from soul singer Jamie Liddell with me here in the Soundcheck studio, and a song called When I Come Back Around.
When I come back around, when I come back.
That's Jamie Liddell with a live performance of his song When I Come Back Around. You can see video of Jamie's performance here in the studio at soundcheck.org. That's going to do it for the show today. On Monday, Soundcheck includes a live performance from the folk pop band Ivan and Alyosha. The Seattle-based group joins us in the studio. Plus, how do you feel about cell phones at live shows? Some bands are outright banning them at their venues, or at least they're making the effort. We'll talk about that. We'll have in-studio guests, but we also want to know what you think. You can tweet us at Soundcheck or leave us a comment on our website, soundcheck.org. And of course, there's the voicemail number, 866-939-1612. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC and New York Public Radio. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team, which often includes Paul Schneider, George Wellington, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. The show is produced by Greta Cohn and Katie Bishop, with Alex Kappelman and our intern, Caroline Scannell. Our digital producer is Mike Katziff. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.